and whether the government should privatize the sale of alcohol in the state. Pennsylvania is one of just a few states where the government controls the retail and wholesale sale of wine and liquor. We keep doing these programs because the issue keeps getting introduced, whether by a governor like Tom Corbett or by a member of the House or Senate, and then it all gets voted down. In January, Governor Corbett announced a plan to auction off the state's wine and liquor stores and to use the money to aid public schools. On Monday, the House Liquor Control Committee voted to give beer distributors a chance to buy liquor and wine licenses first before opening the auction to other retailers. So once again, here on Radio Times, debating the sale of liquor here in the state of Pennsylvania. Joining us by telephone is Lou Bryson. He's a freelance drinks writer, author of the blog Why the PLCB Should Be Abolished. And Lou Bryson, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty. Good to be here.
Nice to have you here. And here with us in our Philadelphia studios is Mark Steer. He's a writer activist who lives in Mount Airy, a section here in Philadelphia, author of a new book unrelated to what we're talking about called Grassroots Activism and Healthcare Reform. And Mark Steer, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
Nice to be here, Marty.
Lou, let me begin with you. And do you think between the governor and this House committee vote on Monday, do you think Pennsylvania is closer to privatizing the sale of liquor?
I'd go with what Terry Madonna out at Franklin Marshall's polling institute said. He said we had about a 40% shot at it, which doesn't sound good, but then he follows by saying it's the best shot we've ever had. I kind of fall in that.
So it's the best shot, but if it's only 40%, then it probably won't work out. Is that how you're seeing this scenario end, Luke?
You know, it all depends on how the House votes. If the House passes a workable bill, then you're going to have the House and the governor supporting this, and it's going to put a lot of pressure on the Senate. And to be honest, that's kind of the wild card, because we've never seen privatization go to the Senate before. So we really have no idea what's going to happen there.
Well, let me turn to you, Mark, and I know you're a critic of privatizing the sale of alcohol here in the state of Pennsylvania, but do you see some movement on this issue?
Not really. I think the Republicans stacked the committee. John Taylor, who's a Republican chairman of the committee, came out with a modified bill that picked up a couple of votes. But I think basically the problem is there isn't a workable proposal that both keeps revenues that the state needs and that keeps liquor and wine prices down to about where they are now. So I think when the rubber hits the road, they're going to find out there isn't anything that they can pass that makes sense in the state.
And I should say that Taylor said that if this goes through, and this is a scenario we don't know the exact answer to, the state could reap something like $800 million. Do you buy that number?
I think that's wildly over-optimistic. You know, the number keeps changing. 2 years ago, Mike Terzai said $6 billion. Then a year later, $4 billion. Then the governor said $2 billion. Then it was $1 billion. Then it was $1 billion over a couple of years. Now it's $800 million. But if you look at the numbers that were in the Philadelphia Inquirer the other day about how much they intend to sell these stores for, and you do the math, the most they're going to get is $280, $300 million.
And that's based on your calculations?
That's what you get for the retail licenses. That's not counting the wholesale licenses. That's actually where the big chunk is coming from, because those are large, large companies that have a lot of money, and it looks like the legislature wants to soak them for it. I don't actually like that idea, because, to be honest, if they're going to soak those big companies for a lot on license fees, those companies are not going to eat that money. They're going to charge us. So I would much rather see more reasonable license fees and forget this windfall. I don't see a need for a windfall, to be honest.
Well, but let me just pick up on that, and I'll get you back in on the conversation, Mark. But that seems to be the argument coming from the governor, coming from people who support this idea, as you do, the idea that this is an asset that the state has, and that asset can be used, according to Governor Corbett, to help public schools. What's wrong with that?
Well, for one thing, I don't really see it as an asset. It's an annoyance, more like. What we have here, the only real asset we have is essentially the legal right to sell wine and liquor. Mm-hmm. Now, we've got that spread out all over the state already, but if you take a look at what other states charge for it, it's nowhere near that.
So you're saying that they're at least as it stands now, the state would be overcharging for some of these licenses?
I believe so, yeah. I mean, and again, I've had a real issue with the idea of the state stores as an asset from the get-go. Mm-hmm. I don't see them as an asset. I see them as a hindrance. I mean, we could have a private system like almost every other state has, and I really think that would be an asset because it would create jobs if we had anywhere near the normal average, I should say, rather the normal number of outlets. I mean, a state our size and our population, going by what the average is in the country, should have somewhere around 2,600 of these stores, and we have 600, and the number just keeps getting smaller.
Well, Lou, I want to go back to you, but I know Mark wants to weigh in. I mean, do you see this as an – I know you don't agree with selling it, but do you see the system as an asset, a state asset?
The system we have now definitely is a state asset. I want to make 2 points. The first is there's a bit of a bait and switch. There are two groups of people who want to privatize. One is the Republicans whose real aim is to shrink the public sector, undermine public sector unions, and drive down wages for both public and private sector employees. That's the strategy of Republicans in Ohio and Wisconsin. And I just want to read a short quote from a Republican Joint Economic Committee report in March 15, 2011. A smaller government workforce increases the available supply of educated, skilled workers for private firms, thus lowering labor costs. Lowering labor costs means lower wages. This is all about Republican policy designed to lower wages for not just public sector workers, but private sector workers. So that's the fundamental political goal here. But when you look at the narrower question, there are two groups of people. There are people like Lou who want a lot more access to alcohol, and they want it cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
That's why he doesn't really want
high licensing.
Let me finish.
Yeah, I'll give you a chance, Lou.
He doesn't want high licensing costs. They want to reduce the liquor tax, the 18% liquor tax. The only way to have competitive private stores in Pennsylvania is to reduce those taxes, which means the state is going to be out $170 to $250 million every single year.
So,
because we benefit from the huge public monopoly, which bargains down prices from distributors, and we benefit from the fact that there's no advertising and there's a lot lower overhead from our state stores.
So, Lou, tell us what you want.
Well, first off, I don't necessarily want lower taxes on alcohol. I mean, that's not in any of these bills. The 18% tax, which is laughingly called the Johnstown Flood Emergency Tax, which it obviously no longer is, but nobody's talked about changing that. That's not in the current bill, and I don't know of anybody that's planning on changing it. So that's just not. I mean, I'm sorry, Mark, but that's just not true. The other thing, I'm not really interested in lower prices because if I want lower prices, I go across the river and get them. I mean, I go to New Jersey to buy my wine and spirits, and that's illegal, which is one of the things this bill will also change, by the way. That takes the penalties out for that.
But when
I do go over, I'm not going over for better prices. I'm going over for a better selection and better service, neither of which the state store is delivering.
Well, picking up on that, but I mean, it sounds like, I mean, why wouldn't you want cheaper alcohol in Pennsylvania?
Oh, if I could get cheaper without cost. And see, that's the thing. There was a wonderful description of prohibition in which they said the demand for alcohol is hydraulic. If you press it down in one place, it will come up in another. It's the same thing with the prices of alcohol. If you're going to drive down the price of alcohol by cutting taxes, that money is going to come up somewhere else. I mean, it's like I said about the high license fees. If you charge high license fees, prices are going to go up. If you charge higher taxes, prices are going to go up. Conversely, if you lower the taxes and the prices go down, either in the state stores or in a privatized system, the state's got to reap that revenue somewhere. So I don't see lowering the state liquor tax is a non-starter.
Well, let me go ahead, Mark.
There are two possibilities. Either you keep the tax where it is now. in which case the cost for wine and liquor will skyrocket by 20 to 45%, because the markup of the state store is about 30, 35%. Markup in private sector, remember, the state is both the wholesaler and the retailer, and its total markup is 30 to 35%. If you have a wholesaler markup and a retailer markup, you're talking about a markup of 50 to 75%. And that means that prices have to go up 20 to 45%. And that's going to harm everyone. So either you keep the tax where it is and prices go up, or you lower the tax, and then the state is out $170, $200 million of revenues. That's on top of the $80 to $100 million of revenues the state loses in the profits from the state stores.
Let me ask you, though, Mark, a philosophical question, and this has to do with the Liquor Control Board and the fact that we have a system where the government essentially tries to control people's consumption of alcohol and at the same time sells them alcohol. Why is that not a contradiction?
And that's a great question, because it's important that we do control the sale of alcohol. Look, I drink single malt scotch. I drink fine beers. I read Lou's blog to find out what to buy next. And we want to balance three things. We want to enable people to enjoy the pleasure of drinking alcohol. We want to discourage the harms of alcohol abuse. And we want to generate tax revenues. Now, there are a couple of ways to discourage alcohol abuse. One is to have higher taxes, but the other is have state control, the way we have it and the way other states have had it. And what you find then is that it's a little bit more inconvenient to buy liquor because there aren't as many stores.
Right.
There's no advertising. Store hours
there is advertising.
Well, there's much less advertising than in a private sector.
We'll pick up on that.
And
we'll pick up on that. Go ahead.
And
Mark.
There's and hours are restricted, and the result is that there's far less alcohol consumption. There've been a lot of studies of what happens when you shift from public to private. The average increase in alcohol consumption is 44%. Now
Lou, hold on one second. Only because
can I just say
you can't. We have 45 seconds before our break.
Okay.
And Lou, I just want you to respond to this notion about if the state controls a liquor, it's controlling people's drinking. What do you say to that?
I say it doesn't, because it's controlling one small part of the market. It does not control any beer sales. It does not control any sales by the drink. It does not control the sales at breweries. It does not control the sales at wineries. All it's controlling is take-home sales of wine and liquor. That's it. And if you're not, I mean, if you're serious about controlling alcoholism, you have to control alcohol. Are we going to have state-owned beer stores and state-run bars? I don't want that.
Well, let's take
it. If you don't control everything, you don't control anything.
Well, we are, as I said at the top of the hour, once again revisiting Pennsylvania's Liquor Control Board and plans to privatize the sale of wine and liquor in the state, talking with Lou Bryson. He's a freelance drinks writer, author of the blog Why the PLCB Should Be Abolished, and Mark Steer. He's a writer and activist who lives in Mount Airy. We want to hear from you. 1-888-477-9499. We'll be right back.
Medford Lees, a Quaker-related community for those age 55-plus, supports WHYY. On March 23rd at 10:30 a.m., Medford Lees presents A Land Twice Promised, a performance by Noah Baum. Baum creates a moving testimony, illuminating the complex history and emotions that surround Jerusalem for Israelis and Palestinians alike. Light lunch and discussion follow the lecture, co-sponsored by Medford Friends Meeting. More information about Medford Lees communities and to RSVP online at medfordlees.org.
This week in This American Life.
What would be wrong with one channel that showed nothing but puppies acting the natural comedians and cuties that they are all day, every day?
After 25 years as a businessman, one man starts from scratch to create a cable network with this theme song.
Puppies, 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 puppies.
The cutest, fuzziest radio story on earth. Puppies, 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 this week. Puppies,
puppies, puppies, puppies. Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
It's almost time to celebrate New Year's, Persian New Year's, that is. Our guest tells us how he's making the day a little more fly.
We blend, we mix the Iranian and the black cultures together. So it's like having, I guess, like Kwanzaa and Nowruz at the same time.
We're talking Persian New Year with comedian Tehran Van Ghasri. That's next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. We are talking once again about the possibility of privatizing liquor sales in Pennsylvania, an issue before the legislature in Harrisburg. And Governor Corbett, who campaigned on this issue, proposed selling off the licenses for liquor and wine business and using some of that money to pay for public education in the state. We have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. Our guests are Mark Steer, joining us here in our Philadelphia studios, and on the phone, Lou Brayson. Mark, you wanted to respond to this idea of how the government, I guess, can control people's consumption of alcohol.
The fact is there have been experiments done, natural experiments. States remove public stores, privatize them. Sometimes they reprivatize. It's happened in the United States. It's happened elsewhere. A recent study in the Journal of Addiction looked at 17 of those studies and found on average when you move from public to private control of liquor, you have an increase in consumption of 44%. Now, what does that mean? That means 10 to 20.
Can I respond to that?
No, you can, Lou, but hold on one second. Let me give Mark a chance to finish.
Luke, last time, that number is off. Hold on. You can say
whatever you want about all your theories, but we have hard evidence of this.
Okay, go ahead, Mark, and then Lou.
And here are the consequences. Accidents increase 10 to 20%. Deaths due to traffic accidents increase 10 to 20%. The murder rate increases 5 to 10%. Suicides go up 5 to 10%. Rapes increase. Alcohol-related diseases like cirrhosis go up 15 to 30%.
Let me give you a chance, Lou, to respond to that. Do those numbers make sense to you?
Well, first off, 45%, if you actually read those studies, and I have, 45% is actually sales. It's not consumption, and there is not a direct relationship. I guarantee you that if you privatize in Pennsylvania, sales in Pennsylvania will go up. Because we aren't going to be going across New Jersey and buying booze. It's because, I mean, I go to the stores, I see the license plates. I go to the stores in Delaware, in New Jersey, Pennsylvania plates all the time. The PLCB itself admits there's a large amount of what they quietly call border bleed going on there. They estimate that the tax loss is as much as $100 million. Now, if you're losing $100 million in taxes, that's a large amount of sales. If we privatize and those sales all come back here, and these same reports will be saying, oh, consumption went up in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. Well, it didn't really. And that's, I mean, they use sales as an equivalent of consumption, and it's a flawed model. Mm-hmm. As far as the other thing, I mean, how long were those numbers watched?
Well, you know what, I don't want to get too deep into some of this research. But let me go back to you, Mark Steer, because the way the law is set up now, it is frankly illegal if you live in Pennsylvania to buy liquor in Delaware and New Jersey, our bordering states. And as we know, there are liquor stores all along the border there. Does that make any sense to you? I mean, why should someone in Pennsylvania be penalized for buying their scotch, as you said, you love scotch, buying their scotch in Delaware?
Well, first of all, let me just say that the state stores have improved a great deal. They can improve a lot more. I have a really good selection of single malt scotches, all of which I've bought in the Chestnut Hill and the Mount Airy state stores. So you can buy stuff here. Sure, some people go across the border. You know what? It's a very small number of people. Mm-hmm. It's a minor inconvenience.
But it is considered illegal.
It is illegal, but, you know, Lou says he's done it. You know, I know where Moore Brothers is. You know, it happens, but it doesn't change the impact of the control system on dealing with alcohol abuse and problem drinking. And it doesn't change the impact on the enormous revenues we get from the state.
Yeah, Lou, going back to you, and there, it looks like there have been efforts to try to modernize the system, different hours. You know, some stores are open into the evening. I think some are even open on Sundays as well. An attempt to make the state store system more user friendly. Is that a sign of progress from your perspective?
I find it incredibly coincidental that all this occurs when there's a threat of privatization.
And you think it's in response?
I'm sorry?
You think it's in response to the threat of privatization?
I do. I think it's direct. I mean, and to look at it, unfortunately, in perspective, I would look at you know, what happened when Jonathan Newman was the chairman of the board.
Yes.
We had a lot of improvements, and once Newman left, things slipped. And as far as that goes, the improvements that we've seen, the wine kiosks were brought out as an improvement. And they were a disaster. The state stores brought in a new POS system, a new inventory system, point of sale system. Again, disastrous implementation. The state wanted to improve service, so they hired a company to train their employees, a company that was run by the husband of one of the regional managers. We've got ethical investigations going on now of the former CEO and one of the board members, and I think the director of marketing. I'm not sure what Mr. Short's actual title was. This is all coming out of an agency that is way too independent. It does not depend on the legislature for its budget. It essentially self-generates its budget. It has its own court system. It has its own police force. It does not answer to anybody. And I'd remind you that the Inquirer ran a series on the excesses and problems with the PLCB's court systems, I think about 6-7 months ago. This is an agency that is not under control itself. And I see abuses, I see arrogance, I see non-responsiveness. And I honestly, all these improvements that they want, and when you're asking for improvements, they're saying, could we open on Sunday? Could we have longer hours? And yet you're supposed to be an outfit that says you're controlling access. Mm-hmm. And how long is this going to last? Is it going to last until privatization goes away again?
Well, hold on one second. Let me give Mark Steer a chance to respond to that.
Well, first Lou says that the threat of the legislature is leading to this modernization effort. And then he says there's no legislative control. Well, I think that's a contradiction. If the legislature wants to exercise control to encourage modernization, they can do it. And it would make a lot of sense. In terms of corruption, I think the biggest corruption is the crony capitalism of the corporate administration, which in this case, as in the fracking case, is going to give a sweetheart deal to wholesalers and retailers, to the big box stores, and in turn get
big box stores are not included in the amended bill, Mark.
Well, we'll see how it comes out. They're there in part. We know that they've been giving a lot of money to Governor Corbett already. We know that once they get these stores and generate more money, there'll be more money going to Governor Corbett's campaign funding.
But
that, to me, is the real corruption.
That really sounds like an ad hominem attack to me, but what do I know?
Well, let me just jump in here, because we have to say that Governor Corbett is not the first governor who has talked about privatizing the state store system in Pennsylvania, Mark.
Well, that's true, but I think the larger issue is the one I talked about before. It's all about the Republican effort to undermine the public sector, undermine public sector workers, undermine public sector unions who are, you know. Can I just say a little bit about the United Food and Commercial Workers? Because they've been allies of mine for a long time. They're concerned about the 4,000 really well-paid jobs in the state stores, but they're not just concerned about them. Every progressive effort in this state in the last 20 years, or 40 years actually, and just the ones I've been involved in, raising the minimum wage, getting funding for SEPTA, and the Affordable Care Act, which would not have passed without the work the United Food Commercial Workers, Local 1776 and 23 did in this state in support of it. None of that would have happened without them. So I think the broader issue is really important. If you care about moving the state in a progressive direction, you don't undermine the biggest ally the progressives have.
Lou, let me pick up on that. Then I do want to get to our callers, because if this system goes forward, or this plan goes forward and the system becomes privatized, what happens to those workers? And these are, you know, these are good paying jobs with benefits, I would say a shrinking description of jobs these days. Do you worry about those workers?
Absolutely. From the first day I started my blog, I've always said this is the most difficult issue of privatization. Mm-hmm. That said, if we had a similarly fossil agency that, say, I don't know, the example I've used is one that did blimp inspections that's left over from 1934, and it employed 4,000 people. Would we keep them for the 5 blimps that visit the state every year? I mean, this is a system that we don't need. And private liquor stores fill the needs of citizens of almost every other state, and they fill them well. People are happy with them. Pennsylvanians are happy with those stores. They're not happy with these, and we consistently poll against them. In fact, as far as that goes, Mark, I'm sorry, but I mean, polls show that union households are in favor of privatization. Liberal, self-identified liberal Democrats are in favor of privatization. This is really a subset. This is a different issue from general privatization. I'm not in favor of privatizing the turnpike. I'm not in favor of privatizing the lottery. I am in favor of privatizing the Pennsylvania state stores, and I count a lot of progressives who are in that with me.
And that's
a different case.
That's Lou Bryson. He's a freelance drinks writer, author of a blog called Why the PLCB, the Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board, Should Be Abolished. Joining us, obviously, by telephone and here with us in our Philadelphia studios for another opinion is Mark Steer. He's a writer activist who lives in the Mount Airy section of Philadelphia. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let's see what some of our listeners are thinking. We have James joining us on Radio Times. James, go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you very much for taking the call.
You're welcome.
It's a great subject.
Thank you.
I would like to say that I'm a supplier. I've been in the state for 15 years. Some of the challenges that I have of working with the PLCB is that they mandate what pricing is. They set the amount that we must discount the product. And they also limit the times that we can put a discount on the product. This is what drives consumers to other markets to buy the product. We love the state. We love the opportunity. But we just can't get our product to market. Either the state won't buy it or they set these parameters on pricing that we are challenged with.
And, James, I want to hear from our guests. I'm curious, what do you supply? What are you selling?
I sell wine to the state.
To sell wine. And is it from a small winery, that kind of thing?
Yes.
And you're saying you feel like you're handcuffed by the LCB. Let me give Mark Steer a chance to respond.
Well, if I sold wine, I'd be in favor of this too, because the state is the biggest buyer of wine in the country, and it drives a very, very hard bargain. And that cuts the profits of wine distributors. As a consumer, that's a good thing. That's why our prices are not higher than elsewhere in the country, and yet we get far, far more in terms of state revenues.
But James is saying it's hard for him to sell his wine in this state.
Well, I'm glad the state's bargaining hard with him. It works to our advantage.
Okay. Even though he's a little guy?
Actually, what James said was that it was driving people out of state to buy wine, and I know it does. That's what I do. And when I do and compare the prices to the PLCB, the last time I went to New Jersey was about 2 weeks ago. I bought 12 bottles of wine. 8 of them were not available in Pennsylvania through the LCB, despite everything I hear about how many thousands of SKUs they have. And all but one of the other bottles was less in New Jersey. The other one, the one bottle, was the same price.
Hmm.
So I don't see where we are driving that hard a bargain.
Well, the
thanks, James, for the call.
Pittsburgh Post-Tribune did a study of comparative prices and found that they're about the same from one state to another. And the advantage to us is not that we pay low retail. The advantage is that we get $500 million a year, a half to two-thirds of which we would not get with privatization, while not paying more. The money is coming from...
No, the taxes would still be there.
No, first of all...
Yes.
No, they
Sorry, I felt like I had voices in my head. Hold on, Lou. Go ahead, Mark.
No, as I explained, first of all, the profits of the stores, the $100 million, would not be there. The sales taxes would be lower because private stores would keep 1% of their sales and there's lower reporting. Third of all, there's a dilemma. If the taxes stay the same, our retail prices are going to go up 20 to 45%. If the taxes are lowered to stop that happening, we're going to lose $170 to $200 million in revenues.
Go ahead, Lou.
First off, the estimates of prices going up are just that, estimates. Okay, if you take away the police-enforced monopoly that keeps Pennsylvanians from buying legally outside of the state, and competition right alongside of the biggest market in the state, which is Southeast Pennsylvania, is going to keep those prices in control, because they're not. If it's legal to go across the border, which the latest amendment of the bill allows, it takes away those criminal penalties. If it's legal to go across the border, Pennsylvanians aren't going to go across the border. They're going across now. And that is going to keep those prices in line. The people in the middle of the state may have problems, but they have problems now because, I mean, there are 20 counties that have either one or two state stores. There's nine that have one in the whole county. They don't get gate service there.
If stores have to make money, the retail stores have to make money. So if you don't lower the taxes and they don't have the bargaining power to lower their markup, we may not have all those great stores in Philadelphia because they won't be able to compete across the border.
But picking up on what Lou just said about that, there are some counties in Pennsylvania where there's really only one state store. Mm-hmm. Do you think there should be? Does that seem appropriate to you, or do you think the people living in that county should have access?
There are 20 or I don't remember the exact number. 20 to rural counties in New York that have no private liquor stores. It's not like because the market's very small. In the rural areas people are going to have less access to wine and liquor than they have now.
Because what? There just aren't
enough people,
to support
a store.
To private store. Lou,
the same counties support more than one beer distributor.
Maybe they like beer more than wine.
The majority of alcohol bought in this country is beer.
Is beer.
Absolutely, which is why your control argument doesn't work.
Because
it doesn't control beer, does it?
But actually does. The beer distributors system is a little inconvenient for us, too.
Right. But you do have private retailers who are selling beer in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, but there's an element of control there as well, and anyone who first moves to Pennsylvania and wants to buy a beer and has to ask someone to find out where to buy it knows that it's a little inconvenient.
Right.
And you know what? A little inconvenience is worth 10 to 20% in traffic accidents, and 5 to 10% in murders, and 5 to 10%
in suicide. Itself says that the underage drinking in Pennsylvania is average compared to the rest of the state, or to the rest of the country. In their own report,
you can't do this research by comparing one state to another because the states are different in so many different ways. The only really good research is natural experiments. Seeing what happens when you change from one system to another. All the evidence there suggests that when you privatize, you get massive increases in alcohol-related fatalities.
That's just as apples to oranges as the other objection you make. Every state has privatized in a different way. Every state that's privatized. I mean, can you really compare West Virginia and Iowa and Pennsylvania? Three very, very different states just in their transportation net.
We have 17 studies of different states.
Hold on one second, only because we have to take a very short break. Talking with Lou Bryson, he's a freelance drinks writer, author of the blog Why the PLCB Should Be Abolished. Also with us, Mark Steer. He's a writer activist who lives in the Mount Airy section of Philadelphia. We're talking about Pennsylvania and drinking, and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Richard A. Reif Heart Institute of Doylestown Hospital supports WHYY. When a heart attack strikes, cardiac specialists know it's survival of the fastest. At Doylestown, they've worked to streamline every step of the treatment process, striving for faster care, fewer complications, and the best possible outcomes. Located on West State Street in Doylestown, the Heart Institute is now easily accessible via the Route 202 expansion. Details at dh.org/heart.
A husband should have guardianship over his wife, not an equal partnership, according to a statement issued last week by the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. On the next Fresh Air, how attitudes toward sex and marriage are and aren't changing in Egypt. We talk with Shireen Alfeqi, author of Sex and the Citadel, Intimate Life in a Changing Arab World. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. For the first time in Pakistan's 65-year history, an elected government has completed a full term. But we'll speak with the country's former ambassador to the U.S. about the violence and why he was forced from his job. Also, March Madness Brackets. That's Public Radio's daily digest of news and culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane with a question to you. Is it the right time, and should Pennsylvania privatize the sale of wine and liquor? Some members of the legislature think so. The governor thinks so. One of our guests thinks so. And we want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Again, Mark Steer and Lou Bryson, our guests. I know we could go back and forth here. Let me get some more callers in. Looks like we have Jake from Center City, Philadelphia. Jake, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
I just wanted to comment on what the changes would do to the beer world in Philadelphia. I work in a high-end bottle shop in Center City, and I know that the recent legislation has stipulations that supermarkets will be able to sell beer, beer service will be able to sell six-packs, bottles, things like that.
Right.
We're right down the street from a Whole Foods. If they start selling beer, you know, they might not have the same selection we do, but they would be able to undercut our prices so that we would go out of business. And yeah, this store's been here for 37 years selling beer.
And you describe as your as a high end beer retailer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have about 800 different bottles in the shop right now.
And your concern is if this is all changed and privatized, the competition would undercut you.
That's exactly it.
Lou, do you have sympathy for Jake and his store?
Well, I do actually, and I'm not nuts about how this bill does this stuff. Beer has to be folded in. I've been actually having this discussion with a number of people about why is beer being included in this. Mm. I think beer has to be folded in because, well, for one thing, we're kind of caught with rising expectations. People have started seeing beer in some supermarkets, and they like that, and they want that. And that's getting harder and harder to deny. By the same token, like he says, these guys have been working within the system, often at a fair amount of expense and risk, to supply us with the good beer that we've been craving for, you know, 20 years now. And I only say 20 because of that's essentially how long the craft thing has really been exploding. Obviously, they were before that.
Sure.
But I don't know. It's not a... It's not a great solution. I would really rather see more a package store solution like they have in Massachusetts, which I think is where this current bill is headed, with a limit on five outlets per company in the state. Nobody could own more than that. They're talking about giving beer distributors a first shot at what you would call an all alcohol license, where they could sell beer and wine and spirits. But unfortunately, that doesn't really help the guys who've gone out there and laid out the money to buy a tavern license and our license to open a bottle shop, and that's not fair.
Well, and Mark, it sounds like you might agree with Lou.
I think the beer distributors are very much opposed to the bill, even in this latest version, because most of them don't have the space to increase their stores. And you know, Lou writes a great blog and pointing out great beers all the time. If you say we have an access problem, I don't see it, because I read his blog. I see a beer I want to read. I go over and I have lots of places I can get it. We might undermine that by undermining stores like Jake's store, and I think I know which one he's talking about. It's a great one.
Jake, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let's see what Ben from Mount Airy has to say. And Ben, go ahead. You are on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
I just wanted to make the point that there's a Philadelphia and the Pennsylvania in general have some the best bring-your-own wine opportunities in the entire country, in almost any other city I've ever been to. And having private wine industry in the state would definitely make much larger the culture of wine and food tasting, could make more private tastings, better wine education, and just expand the culture of Epicurean culture that much more, which I don't think a lot of people are talking about when talking about the benefits of privatization. And if I can make one point, just to be buying great scotches at the Mount Airy store, I'm not quite sure that if you think you can buy great scotches at the Mount Airy liquor store, you know a lot about scotch or liquor culture in general, but I'll take my comment
off
the air.
That's really, especially to a scotch drinker.
It sounds like he's one of my neighbors. Come over to my house and you can have some Dalwhinnie, Lagavulin, Oban, you know. It's all there.
The good and pricey stuff. But Mark, his first point is that with privatization, you can create a kind of culture of food and wine and BYOB.
Right, but the BYOB phenomenon in Philadelphia is the result of control. It's the result of the fact that we limit the number of licenses for restaurants, which means those licenses are expensive. So a lot of new restaurants can't afford them, and that's why they're BYOBs. And that's a great thing that we have the BYOBs, but you have complete privatization, complete free market, we will lose them.
What do you think, Lou?
I don't see anything in the current bill about increasing the number of licenses for on-premise sales.
I'm talking about the principle of it. If you take the principle of privatization to its logical conclusion, this is what's going to happen. You're right, it's not in the bill yet. But,
no,
you know, that's,
it's not. That's, I don't see it going in.
You know what? We have private wholesale distributors of wine in this state. What do you think they're going to want to do next? They're going to want to sell it to restaurants.
Ben, thanks for the call to Radio Times to see what Yvette from West Oak Lane has to say. Yvette, go ahead. You are on Radio Times.
Yes, I was just calling because it seems that in the state and local municipalities, we've kind of adopted vulture capitalism, and we've been selling off the revenue that we bring in as taxpayers, like Veterans Stadium. We brought in tons of revenue that supported Philadelphia and reduced so that we did not have a large tax bill. We owned property. And we've sold off a lot of property, the state building, different things, and now we're renting off space. So different items that we had that we sustained ourselves and revenue that we had coming in, because now you're talking about a one-time money coming in when you're selling off these licenses versus a constant stream of revenue that allows us to maintain a lower tax amount. So it does not appear that when you look at a Jeffrey Lurie who takes over Vet Stadium,
you know what? Yeah.
Immediately becomes a billionaire versus that going to taxpayers throughout the state. I think we're losing sight of, and like you talked about earlier, well-paying jobs, tax revenue for the voters, for the tax base.
Well, you know, Yvette, let me take your call and toss it actually to you, Lou Bryson, and she's making a connection between the privatization of a number of services in Pennsylvania and raising some concerns.
Well, first off, again, as I said before, I would argue that this is an exception, that this is a government service that the people by majority don't want. And second, the revenue is largely not going to go away. Despite what Mark says, we are going to continue to collect that tax. We're going to collect more because people won't feel the need to leave the state to buy liquor. And on top of that, you're going to have hundreds of small businesses in communities that are actually going to be keeping the money there rather than sending it up to Harrisburg for the state to play with. So your local communities are actually going to do better.
What do you think, Mark?
Well, I'm just going to say, you know, I explained before why we're going to lose between $100 to $250 million in state revenues, and I haven't heard Lou answer those arguments. I want to know, are we going to increase taxes? Are we going to cut health services? Are we going to cut education services? And the other point I want to make is, frankly, this is, of all the areas where we should privatize, this is the last one, because there's a public health reason to control alcohol consumption. Not to eliminate it, but to control it.
Mark, did I read you right when you can correct me if I didn't, that with the LCB, it would actually make it easier to control the sale of marijuana, sort of looking forward, that has already created a structure to deal with marijuana?
Yeah absolutely. I think, I would like to see marijuana legalized in the state, and I think when it is, we also want to control it, even though it's probably less dangerous than alcohol. And I think the fact that the state stores are there means that we have a distribution mechanism to sell it in a safe and responsible way.
And do you think that'll happen in your lifetime?
I don't know. The state's changing, and if our progressive allies stay powerful, yes, I think it can happen.
Does that resonate with you, Lou?
I actually don't have an opinion one way or the other on that. I am in favor of legalization, but control, privatization, that's not really on my radar.
Fair enough. Let me see what David from Phoenixville has to say. And David, go ahead. You're on Radio Times. And that would be yes. Hi, David. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm curious about the issue of wholesaler control in the state. I know currently they have a near monopoly control over beer beer sales to distributors. I was just wondering if that's going to be the same under the proposed strategy or not.
And are we talking beer here, David? Are we talking...
Yes.
Talking beer. I'm going to toss that to you, Lou. Do you know?
I haven't seen any changes in the bill as currently amended. No, they did not address the... I assume you're talking about the franchise laws, where a wholesaler gets a brand and then they decide how it's sold and where it's sold and that kind of thing?
Yeah, I'm
sorry.
No, that's
still on the line.
I think we lost him.
Yes, I'm pretty sure that's what he's talking about. And I mean, what he's really talking about is beer and the three-tier system. There's been no discussion of changing that.
And David, thanks for the call to Radio Times. And even going back to what was voted on in the House, or at least the House committee, to you, Lou, is largely about I'm losing my language here, about liquor and wine.
You know, I just say booze.
Yeah, I'm trying to be very specific here, and I'm not doing a particularly good job. Let me see what John from Burlington, New Jersey has to say. And John, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, I wanted to talk about, I believe it was Mark's earlier comments about how privatization will reduce the auto accidents, the alcohol abuse, and the like.
Right.
Well, coming from a family of alcoholics and being an alcoholic myself, who's been clean for 3 years, privatization isn't going to do anything. People like myself and millions of others out there, and I'm sure there's hundreds of thousands in your state, are going to go where they can get it. Privatization will not stop us. And, well, not me, because obviously I'm good now. But it will not stop the auto accidents. It will not stop the crime and murder and rape and all those things he commented on earlier.
Well, John, you know, first of all, I appreciate you calling into Radio Times. Congratulations on those 3 years of sobriety. And he makes an interesting point, Mark, which is that in his case, or his family, if you're an alcoholic, you'll go anywhere to find some liquor.
Right. And my point was privatization will make that worse because it's just easier to find alcohol. All the things about the public system that limit availability make it harder. The other point I want to make is, and I commend him for the effort that he's made. It's
absolutely
great. But problem drinking is not just the problem of alcoholics. It's binge drinkers who may not be alcoholics. It's people who lose control. A lot of traffic accidents are caused by people who can't handle alcohol and drink, you know, once every 6 or 7 weeks. There was privatization in British Columbia. A study there showed that for every 20% increase in the number of store in the density of stores, you get a 3.5% increase in alcohol related deaths. We are talking about 150% increase in the number of stores. So we could be talking about an 18% increase in the deaths.
Well, that's possible, except...
Go ahead, Luke.
We're way under the average to begin with. So we'd really just be coming up to normal.
No, it's not a matter of average. It's a matter of there's a linear relationship. Anytime you increase density, you have...
Is there a causal relationship? Has that been found? Because I'm pretty sure that hasn't been proven.
Well, I think actually... It's pretty clear because at each step of the way, you made a point about increasing sales not being increasing consumption. There are studies that track those two things and show they're very highly related.
Well, we are almost out of time here, but Lou, you know, we as a state have been here before. We have done, as I said, untold numbers of shows about the pros and cons of privatization of liquor sales here in the state of Pennsylvania. Do you think anything is different today?
Yes, I do. I think we've had a number of examples showing that the Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board is somewhat out of control. The wine kiosks, the corruption investigations that I all talked about, the incompetence, that's changed things. People are more interested in higher-end, specialty spirits and wines. That's changed. And what's more, we've got more support in the legislature this time around because the bill's better. And the governor's finally behind it.
Well, we do need to end our conversation. We could go on. Lou Bryson, thank you very much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty.
And he's a freelance drinks writer. You can read his blog, Why the PLCB Should Be Abolished. Mark Steer, thank you very much as well.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. He's a writer, activist who lives here in Mount Airy, author of a new book called Grassroots Activism and Healthcare Reform. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times. Heather Bromfield helping us out today. She is one of our interns. Sophie Reed also helping us out today as well. The show was produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, and Debbie Builder. I'm Marty Moscowain, and we do want to close things out. It does feel like winter today, but it is the first day of spring, so let's listen to Stan Getz and Astrid Gilberto's recording of Rodgers and Hammerstein's It Might As Well Be Spring.
I'm as restless as a willow in a windstorm. I'm as jumping as a puppet on a string. I'd say that I have spring fever, but I know it isn't spring. I'm as starry-eyed and vaguely discontented, like a nightingale without a song to sing. Why should I have spring fever when I know it isn't spring? I keep wishing I was somewhere else, walking down a strange new street, from a man I've yet to meet. I'm as busy as a spider spinning daydreams. I'm as giddy as a baby on a swing.
Oh, that's really nice. Coming up next, it's Here and Now. We do rebroadcast Radio Times. You can tune in tonight from 10 until midnight. Tomorrow, guest host Tracy Matisak will be